From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, a new deal could mean a Democratic majority in the state Senate. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the agreement, and we'll head to New York's 21st Congressional District to see who won this week's primary contest. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Two Democratic factions in the state Senate say they are joining to form what could be a strong Democratic majority in that House, leaving Republicans, who up until now have ruled the chamber in a coalition government, out of power. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
In a joint statement, Governor Cuomo and Senate Independent Democratic Conference leader Jeff Klein say the breakaway Democratic faction that had ruled with the Republicans for the past 2 years has agreed to join in a coalition government with the rest of the Senate Democrats, giving them a potential majority after the November elections. Governor Cuomo, in exchange for an endorsement from the left-leaning Working Families Party, promised to help reunite the two Democratic factions in order to achieve passage of several progressive issues. They include public campaign financing, a Women's Equality Act with an abortion rights provision, and a measure to give college aid to children of undocumented immigrants, known as the DREAM Act. Karen Scharf with Citizen Action, which is a member of the party, is pleased.
I'm very excited to hear that we're going to have a Senate majority now that's going to work for the needs of ordinary New Yorkers. We're looking forward to having a majority that can work with us and that we can work with.
Scharf also credits New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and many of the state's major labor unions who worked behind the scenes to forge the deal between the two Democratic factions. Another reason for the agreement, announced just days after the close of the legislative session, is that several of the independent Democrats, also known as the IDC, have been facing primary threats from Democratic challengers. Those challengers said they would join with the rest of the Democrats if elected. Even with the Democrats reunited, though, passage of the progressive items is not a sure thing in the Senate. There currently are not enough votes to achieve the required 32-vote majority for passage of many of the measures. At least two Democrats are likely to oppose an abortion rights bill and possibly other items as well. Two other Democrats, John Sampson and Malcolm Smith, have been indicted for criminal offenses and face an uncertain future in the Senate. And there are two vacant seats that won't be filled until the November elections. Scharf with Citizen Action says the next step is to elect more Democrats to the Senate in the fall.
Nothing's ever guaranteed, you know, in politics or in the legislature, but that this is a huge step forward on the issues that we've been working on, and now we need to win some elections to make sure we really have the vote.
Senate Republicans weighed in, saying Democrats should not be so sure that they will be in control after Election Day. Senator Skelos has said repeatedly recently that the GOP expects to make gains in the fall contest.
We're going to pick up 3 to 4 seats.
In a statement after the announcement, Skelos called the reunification nothing more than a short-term political deal designed to make threatened primaries go away. He predicted that if Democrats do rule, they will return to an era of dysfunction and chaos that marked the last time the Democrats had power in 2009 and 2010. Democrats say they're different now. The reunion of the Democratic factions will not take place until after Election Day, leaving the independent Democrats a possible way out. They could change their minds and remain with the Republicans if the rest of the Democrats can't win enough seats to have a full majority. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan,
deal to end Senate rift may give Democrats full control in Albany.
Well, we do know that the Senate, which has more Democrats than Republicans, is still controlled by the Republicans because four or five now of the Democrats decided to make common cause with the Republicans. And they consider themselves to be progressive Democrats. And yet they were, quote, partners, not really. They were really junior partners with the Republicans who absolutely refused to go along with some of the things like minimum wage and campaign finance and the rest. So now Governor Cuomo goes to the Working Families Party convention, and he very closely almost loses the thing, except that Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, who is a progressive, pulls it out for Cuomo. Now de Blasio and Cuomo both say after that convention that the Democrats would control the Senate. They'd make sure it happened. Meantime, the governor refused to veto a bill which allowed the Senate Republicans to basically create their own districts, leading a lot of people like me to believe that Cuomo wanted the Republicans in place. It's complicated, but the fact is that there was a substantial amount of circumstantial evidence that the governor, like his father, liked having some bad guys in place so that he wouldn't have to be, with his fairly conservative economic agenda, he wouldn't have to be the bad guy. Now that's over, and it would appear to be over. Along comes our friend Blair Horner. He comes out with a plan and says that the so-called constitutional amendment that would allow, quote, reform is a bad amendment, shouldn't be passed because it will allow the self-serving creation of districts to go on. On its face of it, to me, it looks like he's right. So you have this whole thing, but it ends up that the Democrats are going to control the New York State Senate, and that's going to give Andrew Cuomo, who is fairly conservative in his fiscal policies, an Excedrin headache number three.
Primaries this week, we saw a squeaker down in New York City with 100% of the vote now counted, 47.4% to 43.6%. U.S. Representative Charlie Rangel appears to have made his 23rd term, although Senator Adriano Espaillat says he hasn't ruled out a challenge.
Well, come on. Look, you know, last time it was even closer between the same two guys. So the fact is that what we saw was the ugly face of tribal or ethnic politics, in which by huge numbers of black folk in the primary came out for Rangel, and Dominicans and other Hispanics came out for Espaillat. You know, it's the kind of thing we in America don't like. We don't like to see this kind of thing. We think that people should be voted on in their properties as a person. But in the end, you know, it depends on the way in which the population is configured in each district. If you have a lot of Jewish people, the chances are that you will have a Jewish candidate and a Jewish office holder. If you have a lot of Catholic people, same thing. So that what you, now look, there are exceptions, but for the most part, these primary allegiances that many people feel are what win or lose elections. In the Rangel case, of course, it's an old name. Everybody knows who he is, spends an awful lot of time in the district campaigning, and has done, you know, has done a marvelous job of getting out there. You may not like him, but he really knows how to sell the potatoes. And a lot more people knew him than knew Espaillat, although, of course, by now, he is a well-known name in politics. No, Charlie Rangel can have that seat as long as he wants it, although he says, this is it. As Al D'Amato once said, things change.
Will things change when it comes to ethics reform? You mentioned Blair Horner and, of course, legislative director of NYPERG, and you asked him, will we ever get real ethics reform? And he said, well, maybe if Preet Bharara continues.
Yeah, well, as you know, the U.S. attorney took over the Moreland Act files because, as you know, that Andrew Cuomo just almost inexplicably killed the Moreland Commission, which he had put in place to root out corruption. Now, we haven't heard anything from Bharara yet, the U.S. attorney, but Blair Horner is right. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen because now the U.S. attorney looks into some of the unholy relationships between lobbyists and between individual legislators. Look, it is against the law to say, if you do this, I'll do this for you. I'll vote for this for you. But it is not against the law, the age-old understanding that you get access if you give a lot of money to a politician. There doesn't have to be any explicit statement spoken into an FBI microphone. Well, it's just the way of doing business, the way it's always been done.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartan.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Political newcomer Elise Stefanik has won the battle for the Republican Party's slot on the November ballot in New York's 21st Congressional District, a key step in the race to replace retiring Democrat Bill Owens in the massive district. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more on Tuesday's primary.
Republicans have their eye on recapturing a district once considered a GOP stronghold. Republican Matt Doheny, an investment manager from Watertown, failed twice to take the seat, losing close races in 2010 and 2012. Tuesday night, Doheny lost the GOP primary to rival Elise Stefanik, a Harvard graduate who worked on President George W. Bush's staff and the national campaigns of former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty and Congressman Paul Ryan. The unofficial tally posted on the New York State Board of Elections election night reporting page shows Stefanik leading with about 60% of the vote. Doheny conceded the race with a phone call to Stefanik around 10:30 p.m. Tuesday. With incumbent Democrat Bill Owens deciding not to seek re-election, Stefanik, at 29, could become the youngest woman ever elected to Congress. New York Democrat Elizabeth Holtzman holds the current title, having been elected at age 31 in 1972. Stefanik spokeswoman Charlotte Guyette.
We are thrilled with the turnout of last night's election. This shows the message is resonating.
Stefanik promises she'll focus on jobs and the economy. Owens announced early in the election cycle that he would not seek another term. He is the first Democrat to represent the North Country District since the mid-19th century.
From my perspective, the primary criteria is that the individual must represent us all. And that requires, again, in my view, that that person be prepared to vote with both parties from time to time, depending upon the impact of the legislation on the constituents.
Doheny campaign spokesman David Cataldo Monday morning quarterbacks the primary.
At the end of the day, the difference was the north of $1 million that was spent in negative advertising against Matt Doheny. And the proof in that is if you look at every county except for one, which actually had television, which was Herkimer County, those counties actually went big for Stefanik. In the Herkimer County situation, which had no negative advertising from TV, Doheny won it closely.
Stefanik's biggest numbers were tallied in Franklin, Fulton, and Essex counties. The Karl Rove-backed super PAC, American Crossroads, spent more than $750,000 on Stefanik's behalf. The Democratic nominee is Aaron Wolf, a documentary filmmaker and political novice. His campaign responded to a request for comment by email, which quoted Wolf as saying he looks forward to a spirited and ongoing discussion of the issues with my opponents. WAMC's political observer Dr. Alan Shartok says it's going to be an interesting race.
The real question is whether or not a third-party Green candidate can siphon enough votes in that very competitive district to hurt the Democrat.
Green Party candidate Matt Funicello begs to differ.
My experience as someone who lives in a vastly Republican district is that we don't pull Democrats at all. Democrats feel quite embattled and therefore will vote for whatever corporate candidate runs every election, kind of unthinkingly.
The 21st Congressional District of New York spans more than 16,000 square miles, making it one of the largest districts east of the Mississippi River. It comprises all or part of 12 counties: Clinton, Essex, Franklin, Fulton, Hamilton, Herkimer, Jefferson, Lewis, Saratoga, St. Lawrence, Warren, and Washington.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Two elected officials at Orange County, New York, have sent a letter to members of the State Gaming Facility Location Board inviting them to tour an area they say needs a casino. At the same time, a new study is out on casinos in Sullivan County. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
City of Newburgh Mayor Judy Kennedy acknowledged the Catskills need for a casino.
We think that Sullivan County is deserving of a casino. We know that there are challenges facing Sullivan County and that they could be well addressed with a major economic development project like a casino. We know that Sullivan County has struggled economically, and we know that Sullivan County needs jobs, and we know that Sullivan County needs resources for its schools. We acknowledge all of those needs and want to get that clear and straight. But let me be very frank. No one needs this more in the Hudson Valley, Catskill region than the city of Newburgh.
Mayor Kennedy and Town of Newburgh Acting Supervisor Gil Pacquadio sent a letter last week asking casino siting board members to see the need for themselves.
We are making an invitation to the New York State Gaming Facility Location Board to come to the city of Newburgh and go on a tour with us.
The casino proposal Kennedy supports is the Hudson Valley Casino and Resort in the town of Newburgh, saying her city, with its chronic crime and unemployment, would reap the benefits. And here's Pacquadio.
And we agree that Sullivan County deserves a casino project. The facts make it clear Newburgh deserves one as much, if not more.
Kennedy, Pacquadio, and others stood on Liberty Street near the intersection with Renwick, one of the most distressed areas of the city, to make their point. A spokesman for the State Gaming Commission said the invitation would be passed along to members. Backers of the Hudson Valley Casino and Resort proposal say their location off Interstate 84 and the New York State Thruway makes their proposed casino one that could coexist with a resort casino in Sullivan County. Mark Baez is president and CEO of the Partnership for Economic Development in Sullivan County.
Theoretically, in the interest of harmonious relationships within neighboring communities, you look at this on paper and you go, listen, why can't we all get along and why can't this situation work for both of us? It sounds good, but when it comes to the numbers and it comes to Wall Street and the financing of and the actual marketplace, there is a significant advantage in terms of the ability to finance projects in Orange County because of their proximity to New York City. So they're 40 minutes closer to New York City.
Baez says any location chosen in Orange would be detrimental to Sullivan. In fact, two of the four casino proposals for Sullivan have been taken off the table in recent weeks, citing financing difficulties because of a potential casino in Orange as the reason. Six casinos are proposed for Orange and one for Ulster. Kennedy says it is poverty that proves the need for a casino in Newburgh.
Within 20 miles of the proposed site of the Hudson Valley Casino and Resort are the cities of Newburgh, Middletown, Beacon, and Poughkeepsie, with a combined population of 103,000 people, and the poverty rate in just these four cities is 22.4%. Compare that to Sullivan County, whose total countywide population is 76,665, with a poverty rate of 17.2%.
Baez highlights a new study that finds casinos would boost Sullivan County economic infrastructure more significantly than other proposed locations. Baez, who notes the independent study was carried out by Capacity Business Consulting, points out that mentioning pockets of poverty is not a just comparison.
So if we were to pull out a pocket of population, whether it be the town of Thompson or town of Fallsburg or town of Liberty, I'm sure the numbers would mirror and probably surpass what you see in the city of Newburgh.
He says the study concludes that an awarded casino bid in Sullivan County would have a greater impact on its residents and economy than in any other proposed casino location, and points to wages as an example. In a related development with the proposed Hudson Valley Casino and Resort, a spokesman for the developer, Saratoga Casino and Raceway, confirms that Rush Street Gaming and Saratoga are in serious discussions about a partnership for the Newburgh proposal.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Hospitals have been working for years to digitize patients' medical records. As the Innovation Trail's Ryan Delaney reports, New York State is now expanding a system to centralize the record keeping of multiple hospitals.
A patient's medical history may be in the computer at their primary care doctor's office, and their records may be digitized at the hospital they've been treated at.
However, many of those systems can't easily or fluently communicate with one another.
Dr. Renu Kushal leads the Weill Cornell Medical College's healthcare policy program. She just studied Rochester Area Hospital's implementation of the State Health Information Network, also known as SHINE. Kushal uses the analogy of an ATM. She says under the SHINE system, a doctor can withdraw money, i.e. access a patient's medical records, from any ATM, instead of just at their local branch. Regional exchanges like Rochester's have been in the works for a few years. Now, SHINE wants to make those regional networks talk to each other. She says that ability to share information among healthcare providers will cut down on repeat tests and hospital admissions for patients.
If I don't need to be in the hospital, it's really beneficial to me as a patient to not be there.
Patients have to give consent to have their information added to the statewide network. In Rochester, Kushal says the number of duplicate x-rays and unneeded hospital readmittance dropped by double digits through use of the network.
Having exchange of clinical information is a very effective way of avoiding unnecessary hospitalizations and or readmissions.
That saves both patients and hospitals money. Once connected, SHINE will be one of the largest health records systems in the world. The program's expansion is costing $55 million. The expansion of the records program is also seen as a job creator as companies deliver new ways for hospitals to access records. I'm Ryan Delaney for the Innovation Trail.
With this week's Legislative Notebook, I'm David Giustina. In other primary result news, Republican Nan Hayworth won this week's Independence Party primary in the 18th Congressional District. Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney congratulated Hayworth, who he defeated in 2012 when neither had the Independence Party line. Two-term U.S. Representative Richard Hanna defeated Tea Party-backed challenger Claudia Tenney in the Republican Congressional primary election in central New York. The victory all but ensures another term for Hanna because Democrats didn't put up a candidate. The district runs from Lake Ontario around Oswego through the Mohawk Valley to the Pennsylvania border around Binghamton. A decision to appoint a new member to the board reviewing casino proposals in the state has been postponed. The New York Gaming Commission was scheduled to appoint a fourth member to the Gaming Facility Location Board this week, but says it needs more time. Speaking of casinos, two Orange County communities have endorsed proposed casinos. The Times-Herald Record reports this week Tupelo's town board backed a proposal from Resorts World, while Caesars Entertainment got support from officials in Woodbury. Developers face a June 30th deadline to submit casino applications. After several years of stalemates, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has worked a deal with two municipal labor unions. The total cost of the deal with an SEIU healthcare workers local and a nurses union is more than $879 million. The new deal covers roughly 10,000 city workers, with de Blasio saying he hopes it can be a blueprint for deals with other unions. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1426, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.